We issued those bonds last Tuesday to the market. People couldn't get enough of Atascadero. Let me just say that. We were selling $29 million roughly, which is what we need for our public safety facilities project. We had $80 million in bids. So that means our AA minus credit, which is a large testament to the work you do and Jerry and the staff, was well desired. And as a result, I had told you the interest rate would be around 4.9%. It dropped to 4.4%. So people were willing to invest in us at that rate, which is just tremendous. Our debt payment went from what I had shared with you prior to pretty much right at our budget from D20 funds. And so this is another promise made and promise kept by the city council of D20. The community wanted to see investment in public safety and staffing and facilities. You've kept that promise. And so that payment is being made every year then for the next 30 years from D20 funds. And we thank the community and we hope they'll share the pride you'll have in our new fire station, our renovated fire station 2, and our rehabbed police facility. So just a terrific result. And the amount that we ended up clearing is exactly the amount we need for the construction contract. So, Ms. Rangel, thank you to you and your department. It was a tremendous load of work. Yes, let's give her a thank you so much. It's so fun, too, to watch the team just, like, get into the zone and spring into action like she has done for the last several months. So you're awesome. Thank you. So I wanted to start with that great news. And we are well and ready to go now with that project. Next, I want to share about the open house at City Hall. So this is October 21st from 3 to 5. This is not an open house to see art or the rotunda. You can do that on most other days. But this is specifically about the general plan update. And I really want to make sure people understand it's very unique to be engaged in around when the city updates its general plan. These are every 20-year things. And this is the roadmap and the guidebook for how our community will look, feel, and develop. So it's a very important document that all projects are tied to. And so we're coming to the finish line on the general plan. The Planning Commission will be hearing it on the 21st. The council will be hearing it on the 28th. These hearings will not be decision points. This is a final draft. It's a shot for the Planning Commission and the council to give it a good look, for the community to give it a good look. And then we'll have it out there for about 90 days as we complete the EIR after we receive comment from you. But we do encourage the public to come to the first floor from 3 to 5 to see how the general plan impacts you and our community for the future. So please do come to the open house the 21st from 3 to 5. Now, back to promises made. We're getting a lot of work done. This next slide, I hope, shows... Oh, well, there's the bonds. Hooray for AA minus. That was awesome. Okay. I could talk about those all day. This is the council directed us last year to spruce up A-Town Park, to continue to invest in young people, providing safe spaces, places where scooters and skaters could be. We have completed the resurfacing and asphalting of the back lot, so it's in great form for those activities that we've received a bid and have scheduled painting the building. As you can see, it's an interesting color there that's going to be painted in a way that much more resembles our community. I'll leave it at that, with a new bright awning that could be a certain color as well. So that work should be done here very shortly, and we will celebrate the investments at A-Town Park in the future. But thrilled that's getting done this month. Next, we are paving. Thank you for daring the rain, council members, as we celebrated projects getting accomplished. Santa Lucia Road is well underway, as you saw, and well needed. The potholes were exacerbated in the rain today, so it was good we could see those one last time. Please drive slowly and follow all construction signage as you see Santa Lucia. The road segment between Portola Road and Cascabel was completed yesterday. Over the next 2 weeks, crews will be installing new edge improvements, including driveway aprons. Demolition of the road between Cascabel and Laurel to our new bridge, pretty much, is scheduled to begin this Thursday. This phase will include regrading, cement treatment, and paving. It will continue through the end of the month, weather permitting. Pending favorable weather, it's on completion to be ready for Christmas time. So if Santa needs to make an emergency landing, that'll be a great place. Next slide, storm preparedness. So we just had some rain. The community weathered this storm well. It was a couple inches that we just over 2 inches, depending on where you were. But we do want to remind people about storm preparedness. This tells us the rain is coming potentially. This is a good time. Our public works team works diligently to ensure that public infrastructure is ready for wet weather. What we're doing is cleaning storm drain inlets, stockpiling sand for residents, sweeping streets. We've done a lot of work on the storm drain inlets, by the way. Trimming trees in parks and facilities, managing vegetation in large swales so they keep flowing. We've done a good bit of work there, and just making sure our infrastructure is ready for the storm. Just like for wildfires, people need to protect their home as well from storm events. So make sure your gutters and downspouts are clear. Make sure your yard drains away from your home. Drains can get covered, bent, turned. So give a good look to all those. Check and clear your drain pipes and culverts, just like we have done, removing debris in, from ditches and waterways. Trim branches that are against your house. All these things. This will protect you, your neighbors, and responders. So it's really important. Fun events. The Halloween Spooktacular is coming to, this is a former employee who is awesome, Mark, and he does this for the community every year. And so we just had to throw it in here because when you retire from our city, you get one of these once in a while. It's a benefit. And so we're proud of him and thank him for what he does for free for our community. This is at 7720 Cortez Avenue in Atascadero, and it starts today. So maybe after the council meeting, you can, you know, go, or through Halloween at least. Fall free residential waste cleanup. We get asked about this a lot. This is the opportunity to drop off. No vouchers required. This is at the Slo County Transfer Station in Paso Robles from the 18th to the 25th, 7 to 4. And so you can see there's a lot of things you can bring there, household waste, scrap metal, all kinds of things. You just show up, one drop off per customer, bring your picture ID and your bill. So it's not a pre-registration, but you bring those things to prove you can drop off. So always very popular. We have some new things at the zoo, and you can see there, this is, I just want to point out, this is a flyer that has our logo. On all of our marketing, you'll see that it will continue to show Atascadero, California. So it's the Central Coast Zoo, Atascadero, California. And you can see that in our digital marketing, on our website, and all of our marketing pieces. And we are working on a comprehensive plan to make sure our permanent signage also shows Central Coast Zoo, Atascadero, California. This is a neat event with our friends. We're very grateful that our friends group, and these are the kind of things we get to do with Dr. Cynthia. This is free for members. If you are a member, you should be a member. These are the kind of cool things you're going to get to do as our friends group gets doing more of these neat things. But for $20 for non-members, this is a unique showing of Condor Canyon. It's a really great movie. We'll also have some animal encounters and some refreshments. And our very own Dr. Cynthia was very involved in her career in saving condors and her work earlier. And so she'll have a lot of neat insight on this. So you don't want to miss this unique. These are the kind of cultural things that we're doing at the zoo and educational opportunities. It's really cool. Okay, going from the zoo to police and outreach, coffee with a cop. Please join our police department. This is a way to just hang out, get to know our police officers. They're amazing men and women. And this is October 23rd from 9 to 11 at Malibu Brew. And you will get to see how amazing they are. And all those questions you ever wanted to ask. If I'm going 46 into 45, what happens? You know, all those questions. They'll be able to answer those for you. You may not like the answer, but they'll answer them for you. Okay, next we have another zoo event here. We're going back and forth. Zoo Boo is coming soon. And you are seeing double because there are two dates this year. It was so successful last year. We'll offer October 24th and 25th from 4:30 to 7:30. Tickets are on sale now. This is always a huge event for our family. So don't miss Zoo Boo. Next event is the Bovine Classic. This is always a big hit. A lot of energy downtown. This is America's fourth hardest cow-themed gravel cycling ride. That means there's three others harder than ours. That's amazing that there's that many cow-themed gravel cycling rides. But hey, we have the fourth hardest. There it is. So that's October 25th. You can register today. I know I'm getting long, so I have to throw some humor in. Back to the zoo, we have the Pumpkin Smash. This is hosted by the zoo. This is October 26th. I mean, how cute is that? That makes you want to join or give a couple thousand to the zoo right there, I think, as we're raising money for new exhibits. And October 26th, 10:30 to 12:30, you can see our animals. This is part of their enrichment, and it's a really fun seasonal thing. I've mentioned the friends a little bit. You're going to hear from them later tonight. They're just so impressive, and they're doing so many good things. And so on behalf of the staff, I wanted to make sure I share my thanks for your hard work and what you're doing. We can't wait to hear what you have to announce in a little bit. I'll save that for you. And finally, we have one last event. Dia de los Muertos. Oh, at the zoo, of course. November 1st, 2025, from 10 to 1. So many neat things going on in the community, especially around our beloved Central Coast Zoo. So that's all I have. If there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Mayor and members of council.
Does any member of the council have a question for the city manager? Yes, Councilmember Funk.
Thank you, Mayor. You mentioned that there's signage updates happening at the zoo, and confirming, like, this is the activity book that has the full logo that has a Tascadero. Am I correct in understanding that the sign that's up there right now that doesn't include this full name and logo is a temporary one, and that you're looking for some form of permanent signage that would feature roughly this logo?
That's correct. Those were temporary. We wanted to get them up as soon as we had the change to make sure people knew that was it. But Ms. Banish and her team are working on a comprehensive program, including a van wrap and some other things. So we're making sure we get it right.
Awesome. We are always proud of that too.
Mr. Lewis, you mentioned the savings or the reduced interest rate we're paying on the bonds due to the good rating and good demand for Tascadero bonds. I don't recall if you mentioned the actual dollar savings in terms of annual, but it's over $100,000 a year in lower payments on the bonds.
I could, but I want Ms. Ringel to elaborate on her good news.
Gotcha. I mean, I think to put that in terms for the public, that's very meaningful.
Yes, thank you for asking. That's a great question. This savings is actually about $117,000 every year. So that totals about $3.5 million over the life of the bonds. It's a huge savings.
And I think it's important for the public to know that's what good financial management brings, you know, to the community, is those kind of cost savings that we can put the money to use for other things. So thank you again for all your work. Sorry, gotta get used to our new microphone system here. Now we're going to move on to community forum, and community forum is the portion of the meeting reserved for persons wishing to address the city council on matters not on the agenda. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. We ask you to state your name for the record, and comments during community forum cannot be a matter of discussion by the council. The Brown Act prohibits us from discussing items not on the agenda. However, we may at the end at our discretion ask a question of staff or ask staff to get together with a speaker. So with that, looks like we have quite a line, which is great. We ask you to, you know, line up, speak, so you don't have to, you know, wait for people to come to the microphone. So we will begin with our first speaker. Thank you.
There we go. Thank you, Mayor and Council. As your city manager talked about, getting a lot of things done, the Friends of the Zoo wanted to join into that and kind of take this opportunity to let you know what we've been getting done, our donors, our members, our board. We've had a very active year and wanted to take this time to share with you some of the things that we've got done. As you know, the Friends of the Zoo is our mission is to wholly support the zoo through funding, advocacy, and community engagement. And so I just want to share some of the things we did in 24-25. So in fiscal year 24-25, the Friends of the Zoo contributed about $187,000 to the zoo in purchased items, professional services, habitat improvements, educational support, and critical infrastructure, things that aren't sexy, but critically needed, things like a topographic survey of the zoo. The operations building needs a ton of updating, and we committed to that. And in addition to the $187,000 that we actually spent, we committed another $300,000 plus on things, like I said, like the operations building, the lemur habitat renovation, and the tiger in Madagascar habitat expansion. Well, they're separate habitats expansions. so we'll talk about that. We also spent some time strengthening the organization, adopting new bylaws, making sure we're compliant with all of the federal regulations, expanding board recruitment, and establishment of clear policies. We've done that. This is one of the ones, as an old finance director, that I'm excited about. We increased our membership by 52% year over year, going from 95,000 to 145,000. And we've increased our donations from 44,000 to 144,000. So that was all done with the year. We've also begun laying the groundwork for a major capital campaign, giant undertaking, to support the Tiger expansion. And we've already done some lemur stuff. And we actively started applying for grants this year. And this is some exciting news. We found out today that we received our first grant. We applied for $75,000 for the lemur habitat, and we got a grant for $75,000 for the lemur habitat. So we're very excited with that. The other $500,000 we won't find out about until later in October or November, but we're hopeful. We've also increased our advocacy and communication. And speaking of communication, I see I have 7 seconds left, so I'm going to pass this on to Angela. Angela is our current president.
Yes, and you know, while you didn't say your name, we all know that you're Rochelle Rickard, former city manager and current president of the Friends of the Zoo. So
this one. Yep. Hello, I'm Angela. We've also actively supported the zoo's name change to the Central Coast Zoo, aligning with our broader tourism initiatives and helping raise the zoo's profile as a regional destination. We will be becoming Central Coast Zoo Foundation. So we're super excited about that. We also voiced our support for the TBID assessment increase, recognizing its role in developing Atascadero's tourism assets, including the zoo. And we're proud to work alongside the zoo in achieving the AZA accreditation in March. Since the close of the fiscal year, the Friends have continued to expand our commitment. We have pledged to fund professional animal training for the zoo staff and remain deeply engaged in preparations for the Tiger and Madagascar campaign. To better reflect our commitment to the zoo's future, we are in the process of formally changing our name, as I said. The Central Coast Zoo is a treasured asset of the city of Atascadero, and we deeply appreciate your ongoing support and stewardship. We know that the City Council has invested in a lot of the zoo, and we want to let you know that there are a lot of donors, volunteers, members that are right alongside you, investing time, energy, and money to support the zoo. So thank you for your continued support, and we will look forward to coming back with more celebrations. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good evening, Council. Jeff Oslin. First of all, the last council meeting, I had to leave early. I had a little flood at my house, and I wanted to make sure that our mayor understood why I left early, because he had a lot of concern. Secondly, answer our city manager's question, what happens if you go 46 and a 45? We would be pretty petty in this town, pulling people over for 1 mile over the speed limit. But going through red lights and going 50 miles an hour over would probably get you a ticket. With that being said, Central Coast Zoo at Atascadero, if that's going to be moving on, that we're going to be using Atascadero and its name, then our flyers and such going forward need to be updated, please. And then we would be very thrilled with that. Secondly, to that wonderful stuff, let's see. I'm glad to see the zoo has a lot more events coming up. That's great. They're always fun to go to if one can. So that's great. I am going to give kudos to our public works director. I asked him to drive a couple of streets, and he did. And it's amazing how potholes were fixed 72 hours later after he hit them all. So I appreciate that very much, in that he got the other folks replacing the cable under control, because they were blocking school zones when school was getting out and creating havoc. So I'm very thrilled to see that those phone calls work. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Oslin. Next speaker, please.
Good evening. My name's Jonna McGuire, and I teach at Paloma Creek High School. If you don't know Paloma Creek High School, it is down El Camino behind Danish Care Center. And at Paloma Creek High School, I teach social studies. I teach all the history classes. One of my classes, one of the five that I teach, is political science. And we truly do believe at Paloma Creek, we are not just presenting a laundry list of state standards, but we are creating citizens. And I really want to emphasize that in my class, that citizens, people that are involved in their community, are not a special royal group. They're just people that said yes. Last year, in the spring, unfortunately, we had an event down on that side of town that started my students talking about some safety concerns down there. So we wrote some letters. We sent in some concerns and some requests, mailed those in. We didn't hear anything. So we got on your fabulous website this fall, and we presented our concerns on the page that you have. And so now we're here to do the live presentation. So my students will be here to present some concerns we have, safety concerns, down at El Camino behind Danish Care Center.
Thank you. We're happy to hear from students. Please go ahead.
Hello, my name is Aiden Alvarez. And I've came here to talk about wanting to install a crosswalk on El Camino. Preferably, it would be located on El Camino on Buena Vista, Buena Fortuna bus stop near Paloma Creek High School. And we've had a continued growth on the south side of town with new infrastructure being built, and I think it would just be safer for students and also the new people moving on in that part of the town. And that would be it for me.
All right, thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please.
Annie and Andrea.
And Andrea, can you go ahead and pull the microphone a little closer and so we can hear you? Oops.
Okay. So first, we're going to do the concern, and that is due to the number of students walking, biking, and being dropped off or picked up in the area, traffic congestions and speeding vehicles pose a serious safety concern, especially during school arrival and dismissal times. Lowering the speed limit in the school zone would significantly improve the safety of students, staff, and families accessing the school. Slow speed limits near schools are a proven and effective way to reduce the accidents and improve response times in case of emergencies. We believe that establishing a clearly marked 25 mile per hour zone, school zone, with appropriate signage and enforcement would align with best practices for school safety and reflect the city's commitment to the protection of its youngest residents.
So this is a formal request for the implementation of a 25 mile per hour speed limit zone on El Camino Real in the vicinity of Paloma Creek High School.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Isaac, and I have a concern in the Avenida Maria and El Camino Road. Significantly obstructs the view of people parking on the ramp and towards off to the bus stop and to the fire hydrants. And you can't really see trying to go into a left lane or a right lane trying to get in or get out. So my request is that we put a red line to the fire hydrant from the left side of the entrance. It's by a hospital, or it used to be CHC or something like that. And another red line from the bus stop to the other ramp. And just to prevent traffic flow and stuff, and just to make it safety so people can get in, people can get out, and not to get hit by other cars and everything. That is all for me. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And if you hang on a bit, we don't comment after each speaker, but at the end of community forum, I'll try to address some things. So So in other words, please don't leave till we're done with community forum. So.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. My name is Brett Boyle. I've lived on the Central Coast most of my life. I retired after working 25 years at Atascadero State Hospital. I've experienced many violent incidents over the years, and as a result, I wound up with post-traumatic stress disorder. Managing PTSD is a daily challenge, and I found that cannabis products, specifically those that I purchased from Megan's Organic Market in San Luis Obispo.
I'm sorry. Excuse me, Mr. Boyle. We are going to be discussing at length cannabis.
My timing's off, isn't it?
Two agenda items down the road here. So I'll need you to, you know, address, wait till then to address your comments.
Will do. Thank you.
That's on the agenda, and this is only for items not on the agenda. That's quite all right. Thanks.
Good evening. My name is Don Clickard. I've been a resident of Atascadero since 1970. That was about when dirt was invented. Anyway, Chief, I wanted to just apologize once again for your having to intercept my conversation during council meeting the last time I was here. I apologize, and I assure you it will never happen again. Okay. So I have two things, but one of them was part of a reference to the cannabis thing, so I will save that until later at your direction. But I did want to say, certainly, a good evening, Mayor Bourbeau, council members, Seth Peek, Mark Darris, Susan Funk, Heather Newsom, City Manager Jim Lewis, and the city staff. I want to thank the council and the staff for the recently completed downtown project. The downtown is now a beautiful place and very functional, and an area that we can all be proud of. And Bob Wilkins, your first mayor, said at one point, what we need in this town is a parking problem. And I went to the Brambles Pie Place the other day, and there was a parking problem, and I could not park on Entrada and had to go, several blocks, and that really was good. I congratulate you all for a wonderful thing downtown, and it's really brought it to life. I think the pathway that you've provided for our students from the high school, from the middle school, and from the Fine Arts Academy, both coming to and from school and to each of those schools, has been really, really an important thing that you've done. But one of the main things there is the signal light that controls that crosswalk between those two schools. And that's for the benefit of the students, so nobody runs over them, but it's also for the benefit of the people who would always often have to wait for a very long time as they cross the road with their cell phones in their hands. And anyway, thank you for that. One more comment to the students behind me from Paloma Creek High School. I got to serve on the school board for quite a few years, and after I completed my teaching thing at Atascadero High School. But I was chastised from time to time, not by the chief, but by other members of the board, when I always said that Paloma Creek was my favorite school in the district. Because as a school board person, you shouldn't be picking favorites. But it wasn't a difficult task for me to do that, because it was and is a place of really good teaching and really good learning. So compliments to Paloma Creek High School and that staff. And I'll speak to the cannabis thing later on. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Clicker. And thank you for your, I think it was 16 years of service on the school board and something like 100 or 200 years at the high school. So, yeah. So, all right. Also, I was going to say thank you very much to the students for coming and speaking tonight. I know speaking in public, maybe for the first time, is a little bit daunting. And, so we appreciate you having the courage to come stand up and speak to us. What I'd like to do is have our Public Works Director, Mr. DeBar, here get together with you and talk about some of the issues regarding the placement of crosswalks and curb painting and that sort of thing. Is that something you can do, Mr. DeBar? I don't know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And perhaps you could get contact information and then arrange a time to get together with them and talk about that. That would be great. And I want to thank the Friends of the Zoo for coming to speak this evening, and we appreciate the letter you provided to members of the council outlining in greater detail all of the things you've done and have been doing and will be doing for the zoo. It's a great partnership and has really increased its benefits to the zoo and the community in the last couple of years. So thank you to the relatively new board for your great leadership in this area. We really appreciate it. So, and I think the community does too. So, and Mr. Olson, thank you as usual for your comments. And we hope you don't have to run home for flooding issues. All right. Okay, with that, we will move on to a public hearing, item G1, regarding adopting wastewater capacity charges. And I will first, since this is a public hearing, I will first ask my colleagues if they had any ex parte communications they need to disclose. Anybody?
I don't, I mean, Councilmember Peek and I serve on the citizens, the city right. manager's wastewater task force, but I don't think that's an ex parte.
Conversations just, with staff, I don't think are ex parte.
We're just hip deep.
Got it. Okay, seeing none, we'll move on, and we'll ask Mr. DeBar to begin to present this item.
Thank you, Mayor Burbo. So the item tonight is a public hearing to receive comments on the proposed increase to sewer capacity charges. These are one-time charges that are fixed and applied to new connections to the city's sewer system, or they also apply to existing customers that might upsize and have a higher need or change of use. They're really similar to development impact fees, really with the intention that, you know, our customers pay their share of the past and future capacity upgrades that have occurred. They're all like the sewer capacity, sewer service charges are based upon equivalent dwelling units. This is where one EDU, equivalent dwelling unit, is the average peak flow from a single family home, and the average, it's also got a strength factor, the average strength factor from a single family home. So it's all, that's a basis of one EDU. So this is the calculation for how we come up with the sewer capacity charge. It's based, we had a wastewater rate study that was performed earlier this year that evaluated the sewer capacity charge calculations. It's they use both existing fixed assets plus future CIP cost when this is calced out. The sum of the replacement charge and growth related value charge per EDU is as you see on the table here. So the top portion is the existing cost to pay into the existing, what's the city's already paid for. And then the bottom growth related is that prorated share of the future CIP work that needs to be done to accommodate future capacity and future connections. So currently, the current sewer capacity charge is $6,769 per EDU. It's proposed to increase to $8,856 per EDU. This, if adopted tonight, this will go into effect 60 days from tonight and on December 14th. And then this sewer capacity charge is also adjusted each year for cost of inflation. And that's based on the Engineering News Record Construction Cost Index. And that bases it year over year on the April edition for that CCI value. And then just we like comparing how we, size up against our competing neighbor cities. But this is a most recent analysis of what other wastewater agencies are collecting on their capacity charges. But you can see right now we're kind of the third to the lowest of the local agencies. If this was adopted tonight, it would put us a little higher up, but still well below some of those other agencies that have mostly had recent wastewater, large wastewater projects performed. So the recommendation tonight, after the public hearing, and is to adopt the draft resolution attached in your packet, setting sewer capacity charges for the wastewater division. And with that, I can answer any questions you have.
All right, thank you, Mr. DeBar. Questions from council. I'll start on my left, Mr. Peek. So, Councilmember Peek.
Yeah, how do we come up with? I know that just so we can clarify with the public, with the EDU, since we don't have a city-run water company, things like gymnasium versus laundromat. The gymnasium is one EDU higher than a laundromat. What is a gymnasium? Is it they're just showers involved? Some of them are kind of have always been kind of wonky to me, like how we come up with that. But since we don't have the water data, since we have a mutual water company, how do we come up with some of those calculations?
Sure, that's a great question. And I'm just going to back up to this. This was there was a volumetric analysis done in the early 1990s that kind of established this classification schedule. And what they did was they looked at all these uses and kind of the water consumption records, and then the strength, average strength from these uses. For instance, a restaurant has a much higher, what's called a BOD factor, biological oxygen demand, and total suspended solids. So from a single family home. So that would be a higher, but you know, even if they use the same amount of water, it could be a higher EDU. But these are all based on a single family home, which is a peak flow of 240 gallons per day. That's actually a 1.5 peaking factor. So average water consumption from a single family home is 320 gallons per day. You take about half of that, that might go to the sewer, that's 160, and then multiply that by 1.5 is a 240. And then everything's based upon that relative. I'm happy to announce that we are putting out an RFP tomorrow for a new user classification schedule that's going to take into new volumetric analysis, and we'll get water consumption data from the water company to base that on.
Yeah, I think it's important for the public to be more clear on that, because when you're opening a gym and it's a $20,000 increase to their connection, a new gym versus a car wash, which is an arbitrary amount of washes, being $16,000 and also 2.5 EDUs less than a gym, it seems to the public be thousands of more gallons of water coming out of a car wash than there would be a gym, even if someone showered every 20 minutes, right? Just important things, I think, for the public to kind of wrap their minds around, because it can be unclear.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Darris.
Thank you, Director DeBar. Also, I kind of wanted to, there was a couple of numbers that I wanted to question as well. Okay, so on the residential, we have single family, apartment, mobile home, and senior. Are ADUs just simply considered a single family residence? Because they're typically going to be a lot smaller. So wouldn't the usage, the amount of consumption, or you know, be quite different?
Yeah, so like as this table shows, like an apartment or condo would be 0.75 EDUs, and then senior apartment would actually be 0.35 because they use much, much less, and it's often, you know, perhaps a studio or whatever. And this is like one of the reasons we want to do a new user schedule study, is because we need to expand this table. We need to account for the varying uses. Actually, there's been a lot of change in water consumption as well. You know, we've have low flush toilets and water consumption devices in homes, and it's much more efficient now than it was 30 years ago.
Well, the one that really caught me though was the office unit being the same as a single family residence. I mean, in an office, you will likely have a toilet for a single unit. So how one toilet is going to have the same capacity as is a house with a shower, dishwasher, kitchen sink, et cetera. I mean, that seems a little lopsided, but you said this is all going to be updated coming up shortly?
Yes, it will.
Okay. So I'll be looking forward to that then. Thanks.
Okay. I'll pass it down in a moment, but my questions are in response to Councilmember Peake's question, did I hear you say we will get consumption data, water usage data from the water company?
Yes, we will for our volumetric analysis.
For the analysis, but not for ongoing, you know, annual billings.
That's my understanding. The water company has not offered actual consumption data to the city for individual billing.
Okay, thank you. Because I think it's important to point out to the public, in most communities, your sewer bill is based on how much water you use in the winter when you're presumed not to be using it for irrigation. And that's because if the city provides the water, we obviously know how much water each individual household uses. But since we don't control the water company and they have concerns about providing that data, that's why we have to use this methodology.
That's correct.
Okay. And then I didn't really hear an answer to Mayor Pro Tem Darrow's question regarding ADUs. I don't see them as a separate category here. I thought they were. Or are you saying they're the equivalent of an apartment or something?
I'm sorry. I thought you said EDU.
No, he said, yeah, he was asking about ADUs.
Okay. So a lot of the uses, especially with ADUs and junior ADUs, they're based on square footage. And so a lot of uses, even commercial units and whatever, I mean, based on how big they are, how many bathrooms, we'll look at it. The schedule allows the city engineer to kind of evaluate those and make some adjustments. So when a lot of this ADU craze, I guess, for lack of a better term, started a number of years ago, we came up with some of those valuations, and it's based upon square footage. So
For the public, I mean, an ADU is an accessory dwelling unit, like a guest house or a second house on your property. A junior ADU being one, if you add it on to your house with a separate entrance that could be separately occupied. But so you're saying they don't fall under any one of these particular categories, but you're going to assign them a value based on square footage?
Yes, that's how it is done. So if an ADU that's 1,500 square feet or more is a one EDU.
Okay, I don't think we have ADUs that big, do we? I thought we limited them to 1,200.
And from there, I think there's another category, like if they're under 1,200, or maybe it's 1,200 square feet. I don't have the info in front of me. But then, you know, it goes down from that point. So if they're 500 square feet or less, I believe they're 0.3 EDUs.
Okay. Okay, I think that should be clarified in these tables in the future. And my last question is grocery store greater than 10,000 feet set fee. I don't see grocery stores less than 10,000 feet as a category. I don't know if maybe we don't have, we must have, because like Gather or whatever, I don't know where Grocery Outlet fits in there, but I don't see a category for them. Where would that land?
Yeah, that's one of the things we want to adjust and correct is, you know, not have it just over 10,000 square feet to actually break it down. Or gymnasiums, that's another one. You know, you have, say, Kennedy Fitness in town, which is our biggest gym, right. And then you have, you know, other gyms that are much smaller and have less showers and don't have pools and other things that
right,
we, exactly. We need to make those corrections.
Yeah, there can be a very wide variation. And just as a note, do our car washes recycle water, and perhaps that why they're less water users?
No, they usually have a fuel trap that they take some sediment and also take out sediment, but they usually discharge to the sewer.
They do. Okay, all right, thank you. And I would move down, except I think, Councilmember Peake, did you have a follow-up question? Okay, got it, thank you. Okay, Councilmember Funk.
Thank you. Wanted to check and see in terms of the basis of the numbers that go into this. Does this include the collection system, all the pipes and the lift stations that get the sewage to the plant, or does it just include as well as the plant itself, or does it just include the plant?
No, it includes a collection system and the plant.
Councilmember, are you speaking to the increase? What does it cover?
Yeah, the increase. So the capacity charges would be both, but the increase that we're being asked to do this round is that let me back up. Earlier this year, on the basis of the study, we alerted folks on the basis of two different studies, one about the wastewater treatment plant and one about the collection system. We alerted folks who are on the sewer system already that we were facing what was at that time an estimated cost of $100 million for the new treatment plant and $73 million in fairly short-term costs for the collection system. Are both of those values incorporated into this, or is there eventually another shoe to fall if we get more as we get more information?
So the entire cost of the secondary treatment improvements at $120,000. This is a CIP table that was used for the rate study earlier this year. These are inflated dollars, but you can see on the bottom there the treatment plant expansion and those costs, and then the collection system is above it. The collection system was pared down quite a bit from what the collection system master plan recommended, and so we will be part of this INI study and other things and that we're looking at. We will come up with a priority list, and we plan on doing another rate study in about a year. We'll start that after we do the user classification study and the volumetric analysis and get those new schedules in place. And then that will be fed into along with preliminary costs for the new treatment plant and the INI study. Those will feed into a new wastewater rate study that we can identify what those sewer service charges and these new capacity charges could be.
Let me be a little tighter on the
sure.
Councilmember. These only include funds. The increase only covers improvements to the wastewater treatment plant, the expansion. I think it's very important to understand. So when we looked at this last spring, we recognized that we were so far behind in our rate increase that we needed to start making a number of increases. We also recognized that our methodology was flawed, as it's the best we have, but it needs to do better. And so we decided to bump up rates where we could, establish a task force to actually study this in great detail, which you've been a member of, and we'll share it. I'll get to that in a second. And then look at connection fees, but I didn't want to bring this to you until the wastewater task force had met for a bit to at least have understanding of what connection fees do and how they work. And so before you is a very small adjustment. This is not the overall adjustment we'll need. This does not address lift station expansion, main expansion, forest main expansion. This is simply a small incremental step towards a contribution to the $100 million wastewater plant. So to answer your question very clearly, this does not address big lift station improvements, main improvements. We need to do more. To the mayor's point, I wanted to share that you'll get a report. I was kind of arguing myself or whether to put this on the agenda for tonight or wait till you heard the wastewater task force report, because there's so much information the rest of the council's not up to speed on, because you and Councilor Peake have been on that and done a great job. But the task force made it clear that they want not just a volumetric analysis, but they want to look at a variety of ways that these fees are calculated. So to your questions that you're asking, hey, this doesn't seem right, and why is this? The task force completely agrees with you. We went to the water company and actually asked, what they're willing to give us is information by category, but not by you individually, your account. So they'll say, okay, restaurants in general use this. Grocery stores in general use this. So it's a step towards tying a rate to use, but it isn't, or many cities who control both sides of the billing say, you use this, so you pay this. And so we made it clear that we're interested in that. The committee wants to explore that further, but there was no commitment yet. That work will start after you receive the report and give me direction in November on the work. And consequently, at that meeting, we'll also have queued up the contract for the volumetric analysis and some of these other things that I can hear you want to dig into. The committee wanted to as well. So that's kind of where we're headed. I can appreciate the council's kind of, why this, what? the task force understands that, staff understands that, and we're looking forward to, as we look to adjust rates in the future, which we will need to do. We're quite behind. We want to make sure it's done transparently and there's buy-in from the community in how we do that.
So to that end, just a couple of things. Is it fair to say then that that the purpose of making sure that we have capacity charges that at least reflect what we know now on additional costs that are needed to be able to expand capacity to handle new services and new customers. And that this is necessary to get, to make sure it's fair, that new customers pay their fair share of the new costs of the capacity that serves them. Is that right?
That's what we're trying to get, yes.
Okay. And so this won't be the last time we look at this, of course. I mean, that we'll come back to this as you get, as better information comes in this process, because we'll have a bit clearer understanding of what that wastewater system will be, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so then there'll be another whole looking at the rates for ongoing customers and that. And then I just want to ask, in terms of the we talked about some pretty large numbers, just general floating around for costs involved in a new wastewater treatment plant. I want to confirm that is the only reason for that we lacked capacity for growth, or do new requirements from the state play a factor so that existing customers would need to have new plant capabilities in order to maintain the existing services that they have, as well as new customers?
Right. So I think that's a very important point to make. So the answer is no, it is not just growth. So actually, while the plant is at capacity, and as we look at rates for the future, both on the maintenance side and the connection side, the task force wanted to make it very clear that new development pays its full fair share, which is why we need to look at these. But that isn't the only reason. So clearly, if we're going to expand the plant, that cost of that expansion should be borne by new connections to the plant. However, even if we weren't expanding the plant, we no longer meet the state requirements for how we treat our biological waste, the solids and other things. So there's a wholesale technology going from basically gravity and dirt flow to a mechanical system that treats at modern standards. And so we have to do that anyways, which is why the maintenance side of the equation, the annual bill, will also have a significant portion of the new plant attached to it, because every existing customer would need to pay for that portion of it.
And we'll be having an extensive discussion on that in November.
Correct, Mayor.
Got it.
Okay, so. Great. Thank you very much.
Councilmember Newsom. All right, thank you. Okay, I'd like to take this, put this out for public comment. Any member of the public wishing to comment on this item, please approach the podium. Mr. Oslin, welcome.
Good evening, Council. Once again, Jeff Oslin, resident and concerned resident. Could you put that slide back up that had the matrix of what we call a gymnasium and a single family home, et cetera, please? It's still not there, but I'll keep talking as you find it, because I want to congratulate everybody. You confused me tonight, and that's not easy to do. So first of all, if you look at single family, it says dwelling unit, and it says current would say 67,000. Proposed is 88. Is that a dollar amount?
Yes, and that's 100, not 1,000.
Okay, so all right. So we're basically bringing up a single family sewage rate $1,000 a year, by the way I see it up there. Because it says 6769 versus 80. Don't have my glasses. I think it's 8856. That's a steep amount. That's not